Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast from the International Motorsports Association and Radio Show Limited.
It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
So, Jeremy, lead mastership is into the pit lane now. Montoya's into the pit lane now. So I think we'll get Oli Plaar cycling back to the front. What price are Mazda 1-2 at this stage then?
Well, yeah, I mean, they were holding those two positions quite nicely prior to this round of pit stops. They were about 3 seconds or so ahead of number five car, which was closing in, Loic Duval, at least on Ryan Hunter-Reay in the second place car. The number five car made its pit stop last time around. Make a note of that. So, yeah, we'll see what happens as a result of these pit stops, but it's certainly still a very, very interesting battle.
Shea Adam down in the pit lane, looking at the GT Daytona points for the championship and working that one out. Acura from Ferrari from Porsche in this race. How will that affect the championship, Shea?
Well, the other thing that I'm looking at right now, John, is drive time. There's a maximum. You can't go over 4 hours in any six-hour period. And most of the cars at the front of the GTD field have been switching between two drivers for the majority of the second half of this race. I don't see how they can avoid not going over at that threshold with certain cars like the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari or the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. So I'm a little bit concerned, or the 74 Riley Technology Mercedes or the 44 Magnus Girardi Audi. So I've been doing a little bit of math there. But as far as the points are concerned, if it stays the way it is right now, Acura take the Manufacturers' Championship with 304 points. Ferrari would come away with 224 because, of course, they missed a couple of races earlier in the year. Porsche would have 288 points, and Lexus would be all the way down with 289 points, but they would still hang on to that second place.
Thank you, Shea. Under 2 hours then. WWE OJ 99.1 around the circuit, Series 202 XM217. Our Porsche keys to the race earlier on in Michelin Countdown to Green. Be there in the dark. It's been dark for a while now, already a couple of hours. Normally we'd be coming into the darkness around about now if we were here in March. Endurance Cup, all done bar the shouting. Subject to post-race tech, congratulations to the number 10 Cadillac squad for winning in DPI. We had the BMW winning in, it was 24 BMW, wasn't it, Shea, for GTLM in Endurance Cup? Yeah. And the 48, that's the Lamborghini Huracan from Paul Miller Racing. They came in intending just to run the Enduros and have a shot of that championship. They have fulfilled that and win the Michelin Endurance Cup. All unofficial, of course, at the moment. And as it stands right now, Acura Team Penske in position to take the Drivers' Championship for the number seven crew. And unless the Konica Minolta team can make up a couple of positions, that is not going to change before the end of the race, I would not have thought. Not at least on pace. However, they are only still five laps behind the leader, three laps behind the 31 Whelan Engineering Cadillac. Should be due into the pit shortly. It did pit. Okay, that one was in and out. So
that was a penalty on 281.
Oh, yes, of course it was. Yeah, so yeah. They should be due any time now, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they made it. He's had a bunch of unstops. All of a sudden, the gap between Oli Plaar and Jonathan Bonmarito is out to the better part of 20 seconds. It must have been a blistering, it must have been a super fast stop, I would suggest, because the gap between the second and third place cars is now 2 seconds, which is what it was before that round of pit stops. And Reinhard Rake was driving number 55 car. Duval still at the wheel of the number 5 car. He stayed there. Bomarito has taken over in the 55 and remains in second position. But Oli Poix, either a super fast stop or incredibly quick in and out laps, or a combination, I would imagine, of all three, has now extended his lead from 7 seconds to 19. Last time around for our race leader, Olivier Plar, because he made his pit stop three or four laps ago, so he's got that car, everything up, fully up to speed now. The Michelins are fully up to temperature, and he's turning some very, very quick laps. That 48.3, that's within a couple of tenths of a second of his fastest lap of the race. And Bomarito, having just taken over the wheel of the 55 car, is not yet kind of fully up to speed till the 51 last time around. That explains some of the deficit there.
Very interesting Twitter coming in. Very interesting Twitter. It's going to be an enjoyable PRT later on. Hashtag Michelin PRT. Let's have your thoughts on the Acura versus Cadillac battle, or the Penske versus Whelen Engineering battle, as well as the other contact that we've seen here and the forceful driving. We've seen Tandy with a bump and run to take a position in turn 17. Something that looked like it was straight out of a short track race, which is, of course, where he came from. Seen Scott Dixon with damage caused by another competitor running into him as well. It's been a little bit untidy at times around the circuit, and championship implications for some of those as well. Just seeing a side-by-side pass for the lead in GTD with the 63 car going through. Alessandro Balzan back into the lead there, rubbing up against the 86 with the 16 Porsche right in behind. That was about 5 or 6 minutes ago. A little bit of a hip and shoulder there.
Yeah, so the McMurray has gone from first to third then, and Alessandro Balzan all of a sudden now has a couple of second lead. I guess he was fed up with following the Acura and decided he was going to go through, and now he's trying to pull away from Patrick Long, who's in second place. He also made it past Matt McMurray, and a big gap back to the Meyer Shank racing car number 86 behind him to Mark Miller in the Riley Motorsports Mercedes, 24 seconds back to Miller. I presume number 23 car must have made a pit stop just a couple of laps ago. Indeed it did.
'77 Mazda, no doubt about that. They've pulled out a 20 second lead now. J-Bomb in second, so Oli Poix from J-Bomb. And then the Mustang sampling car. Just because it gets dark, it doesn't mean that it's any easier at turn 17. I don't know how you even pick a line through turn 17 nowadays, Jeremy, because those bumps, particularly under the bridge, are so violent for these low-slung prototypes, which depends so much, of course, on the aero and the downforce that they're getting. And of course, as they're getting fired off the ground, you lose the downforce, and that exacerbates you moving away from the centre of the corner, which is the line that you've picked. It's extraordinary to see them lap after lap. The guys must be getting really shaken around inside. This is a workout.
Yeah, it really is a workout. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's physically and mentally taxing, this racetrack, particularly this far into the race, inside 2 hours to go now. And the drivers, they get a break every now and again, but once you're back into the groove of it, it's still hard work. In these conditions at night time, your kind of mental acuity, I think, probably is even more sharp possibly than during the day. Right? You've got all these lights around you, you've got to really, really pay attention. That's not easy to do.
No, concentration has to be there all the time. This is as much about what's going on in the head as it is with the hands, the feet, what you're feeling through your backside. All the talent in the world if you haven't got your head in the right place, as we have seen this evening, then it's going to be very difficult for you to win races and take championships. Whatever else is going on, you have got to keep your cool. Just Balzan just pulling away at the head of the GTD field from Pat Long after that side-by-side with Matt McMurray. Push Matt Murray back down into third. The Scuderia Corsa Ferrari now leading by 2.8 seconds. Ian McCarthy has just tweeted at IMSA Radio and says, whatever those Mazda skid plates are made from should be used to build everything. They've been sparking in almost every corner for 10 hours. Yeah, that's probably titanium, I think. Which means the sparks you're seeing are very expensive sparks. The most expensive sparks, I said some years ago. I think here at Sebring, those are the most expensive sparks. I've got quoted back to me for a while. In fairness, Sebring has been the site of quite a few phrases that have stuck down through the years. So moving in now to an area where, for particularly the GT cars, Jeremy, you're looking at making maybe one or two stops before the end. It'll be the two BMWs that stop in GT Le Mans next at the front of the GT Daytona field. Well, actually, it's very even indeed. Their pit stops are all the same. The Wright Motorsport Porsche, which has just dropped down into third position there, that will be in first of the leaders by about five laps from Matt McMurray, and then another 10 laps. Balzan still out there. So how's that going to work out to the end of the race, which has still got, for the leaders at least, around about 52 laps to go. And in fact, the 16 car loses third place here, Adam, because it comes in for its pit stop after 26 laps on the circuit.
It does, and Jan Halen taking over from Patrick Long. Patrick, who had been in the car for about an hour, so now Jan will probably drive one stint, and then it'll be Patrick taking it to the checkered flag, since he has a couple of Sebring wins to his name and Jan Halen does not. But a nice clean stop by the Wright Motorsports crew. I would be expecting next into the pit lane from the front runners, Matt McMurray in the 86 Acura, to hand back over to Super Mario for the final stints.
16 is back out with Jan Halen, rejoins to the left hand side of turn one. A bit of weaving from Jan just to make sure that everything's all right and to try and take the shininess off those new Michelin slicks. He has dropped. In fact, he is. Where's the 85? That's the car behind him. It's one of the prototypes, so they'll go back through. 23. I think he's dropped down to sixth position with that stop. The Wright Motorsports car I think he's dropped down to sixth position. Joey Hand has gone through, but he's still ahead of Roman De Angelis in the Aston Martin. They're going through turn 11 towards turn 12 now, and the Wright Porsche is still ahead as he turns in left-handed to turn 13 now.
That makes sense, John. The number 16 car came into the pits about 7 seconds ahead of the Aston Martin, so it certainly makes sense for him to resume ahead of as well. We've got quite a few GTD cars, not quite sure why at this stage in the race, but all sort of pitting at different times.
Back, I can only think that they are back timing. and trying to get themselves into a position that they can make their last pit stop early.
Certainly from now they can make just one stop, one more stop before the end of the race. I think it might be fairly close for the Aston Martin, but I think the number 16 car should be okay to get to the end from here.
With one more, yeah.
With one more.
Correct.
And two more for those that haven't yet pitted.
Correct. And that, of course, is part of the skill here, working out when to get your last pit stop in. Shea Adam, the GRT Grasser Racing Lamborghini, lost some laps earlier on with a drive shaft issue, had to go back behind the wall. It's back in the pit again, but I don't think I can see it on the pit lane.
No, pit lane anymore, John. The rumble of that engine going back to the garage just a few moments ago, so it has been truly a nightmare day for that Lamborghini team.
Yeah, nice to see them back, Jeremy, the GRT Grasser team, but it really has not been their Sebring 2020.
No, disappointing, because they were running super well early in the race. They led the race very convincingly with both Finn Schotthorst and Richard Highstand early on, so it just hasn't gone their way since then. Of course, which is doubly disappointing, because with Frank Pereira as the third driver in that car, we know how quick Frank is. He's a super talented driver, won just about everything you could possibly win, actually, in various different series. He even won an Indy Lights race back in 2008. He loves his racing over here, does Frank, and he'll have been really looking forward to the closing stages of this race. It's a shame that car has dropped out of contention.
Just across the line, the number 4 Corvette, Ollie Gavin, still behind the wheel there in his last outing for Corvette Racing. We hear that he's going to continue with a role with Corvette and GM. Not sure what that's going to be at the moment. I'm sure we'll find out in due course. Leader across the line, Ollie Platt at the sharp end of the field, just completed lap number 295.
Pits again. That's not scheduled.
Yes, from fifth position, Matthias Leist in that car. And they were in not so very long ago, were they?
Yeah, just 9 laps ago.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely agree.
Tail end of the lead lap in the fifth position. It'd be a good run for them, actually.
Shea Adam has this VP Racing Fuel Pit Report.
They are officially in retirement now, is the number 11 GRT Lamborghini, so they are not going to claim another Sebring 12-hour win.
You get this close, you know. I feel for anybody who gets this far into a long distance race and then can't get to the end, Jeremy. Because I mean, part of being in a long distance race, part of being in endurance, the first thing is you want to get to the end. That is the challenge. And then after that, you set yourself different targets depending, whether you're an amateur or a professional, how far the team is up in the championship, etc., etc. But getting to the end, you always want to get to the end, and the closer you get to the end, the worse it is. Hugh Chamberlain always used to say, if the car is not going to finish, I'd really rather like it, he was talking about Le Mans, I'd really rather like it to go out before about 6 o'clock in the evening so we can still get to the pub before they close. Quick pit stop there for...
We to argue with you.
Well, I never know. Not
sound logic.
Sound logic from, Hugh Chamberlain. Haven't spoken to Hugh for quite a while, actually. Let's try and give him a ring next week now that I've said that.
Number 10 car.
That was the number 10 car, Jeremy. Yeah. In and out. Scott Dixon did just 14, call that 15 laps there before he came back in. Oh. And Renger van der Zander now, Shea, I think, got back into that car.
I did see the bright yellow helmet. So, yes, it is Renger van de Zande taking that car to the end of the race you would expect. And also, the last time he's going to drive the Wayne Taylor Racing Cadillac.
Good point.
Can I just offer something up really quickly?
Of course.
I've been working on this drive time thing, as there is a pit stop, by the way, going on for the 24 BMW Jesse Chrome taking back over from John Edwards. Fuel and tires for that stop, and it looks fairly according to standard for the BMW crew. I've just been looking at these different drive times, trying to figure out in GTV if there's anyone who's close to going over this 4 hours in any 6 hour period. And I believe I found a car, the 63 Scuderia Corse Ferrari. Alessandro Balzan has driven already 2.5 hours in this final 6 hour period running up to the checkered flag. I'm a little concerned that he is going to go over if indeed he does stay in the car for the final 2 hours and 20 minutes, as it was planned by the team for him to stay in for the end. Alrighty, back to what's actually going on instead of speculating. We've got the 86 Meyershank Racing Acura in the pit lane. That is Super Mario Farnbacher taking back over from Matt McMurray. He will be into the end of this race, going for a second consecutive GTD championship, not only for himself, but for Mike Shank, and trying to get a second championship for Matt McMurray, his first in GTD, his second consecutive in the years to come. Fuel and tires clean of the grill and waiting for the Acura to be given the all clear to launch back off into the night sky. There we go. Fuel nozzles are out and away goes Super Mario.
If you wanted to take part in Michelin Post Race Tech, use the hashtag Michelin PRT, last one of our 2020 IMSA season at IMSA Radio, hashtag Michelin PRT. We'll take your views on anything that you have seen in this race. There's a lot coming in, as you might imagine, about the contact at the front of the field. But if you are going to do that, make sure you tag it with Michelin, hashtag Michelin PRT. So we'll take your views into consideration. When we get to beyond the checkered flag on RS2, it will be available as a download as well, of course, as an archive. 100 minutes, under 100 minutes to go now. And tear off coming off the windscreen of the 25 as they're waiting for the fuel on the Motul BMW. Out it goes, as also into the pits, people. To Rani, who I think is getting out of that car, is he?
Yes, he is. No, he's not. I thought I saw a driver change going on, but they did have the driver's side door open. Normally, when they do a drinks bottle change, they only open the passenger side, but there was no helmet. Oh, yep, nope. Pipo did run out to the wall. I did see him. So that's Felipe Nasr taking over the 31 for what you would expect to be the final stint of, final driver change of 2020 for the Whelen Engineering Cadillac.
Yeah, Felipe Nasr doing a double. Well, I tell you what, I'm not sure they can go to the end with one more. That is, 60, 96, 97 minutes, Jeremy. They'd have to ease it back a bit to get 50 minutes. I don't think you can get 50 minutes out of one of those DPIs. So
no,
I think the main is smash at the end.
I agree, John, with you completely. I think about 40 minutes is about the max of green flag running. Maybe 41 or 2, but I don't think there's any way you can stretch it to 50.
No. So they're a little bit off. They have had a couple of unscheduled pit stops, shall we say. At the front of the field, Ollie Pla has got about 10 or 12 minutes left. That's going to take him down to an hour and 24, something like that. That's 84 minutes. That's still going to be a bit squeaky, to be honest. GTD stops coming around again, and this is Alessandro Balzan heading towards the pit lane after 22 laps from the lead of the motor race there, Shea.
Fuel and tires only for Alessandro Balzan, as he is expected to stay behind the wheel of the car for 2 hours and 20 minutes total. That's how long was left on the clock when he got behind the wheel for his final stint of the race. A windshield tear off comes off. Fuel nozzle is still attached, and that's the last thing they're waiting for with the Ferrari. The gold wheels have already been put back on, and away goes Balzan.
That's still going to be a bit of a scrap in GT Daytona, Jeremy. That one is definitely not over.
No, don't call that one yet. That's for absolutely sure. Certainly it's looking good for the Ferrari. The car's fast, and assuming they've met the drive time requirements, which a team with that experience, I'd be shocked if they didn't, then I think they're looking good. Didn't Jeff Westwell do the final stint last time at Petit Le Mans? I can't remember now. I think he did.
The team told me that Balzan is into the end.
Okay, but that's too long, isn't it, on timing?
Yes. So
well, in that case, they won't do that, I'm sure. They'll be on top of that one.
Hello, Sean Belby.
Go
ahead, Jeremy.
So just go to plan B, I think, then, for that team.
Two
very talented drivers, so really not a problem.
I think they may be a little bit further through the alphabet than plan B at the moment in GTD. Hello to Sean Belby. Thank you, Sean, for your kind words. In a year of unprecedented struggles, it's been a bright light for all of us. That's appropriate at Diwali. Thank you. It's a team thing, and the team is not just us who talk. It's those behind the scenes. It's IMSA. It's our commercial sponsors here at IMSA Radio as well, of course, for without whom we can't do anything. So thank you for your kind words and your thoughts. I hope all well with you and your family, Sean, and indeed all of our listeners. You've been an immense support, by the way, I should say, all of you listeners. Your comments are always welcomed, good, bad, or indifferent. I'd prefer they were good or bad rather than indifferent, to be honest. We're here to elicit a response and an opinion, rather than to just be wallpaper. But thank you for keeping us going through this incredibly bizarre season of motor racing. All of your comments have been taken on board. It's been an interesting one, shall we say. And not just with our IMSA coverage, but all of what we've done. Challenging from a technical standpoint as well, and there's a lot of people behind the scenes on the IMSA side and on the RSL side, and the guys at iRacing with whom we worked earlier on in the season to bring you the IMSA Pro Series. We've had a lot of exchange of ideas this year. I've enjoyed the challenges in some ways that this has put together, and I've certainly enjoyed the racing. We are the 300. Well, we are for this lap at least. Oliver Platt has clicked over 3 centuries of laps around here. It's an awful lot of laps already, and he comes through to complete another one right now as he crosses the line on that historic piece of concrete that forms the front straight. 90 minutes or thereabouts still to go. WWOJ 99.1, thank you for your airwaves. Sirius 202 and XM 217. They've been broadcasting each and every WeatherTech Sports Car Championship race for a number of seasons now. And, of course, working with us for our Hagerty Radio Le Mans coverage. So what's left out there? Well, at least a pit stop or two for the DPI cars at the front of the field. Oli Plar and Jonathan Bomarito for Mazda. Now 22 seconds between them. But Loic Duval's not giving this one up, although he was a little bit slower last time around than the Mazda ahead of it. He's only 2 seconds behind making up a position. Montoya in his last IMSA race for Acura Team Penske, and Acura's final race. They look like they're going to be taking the championship for drivers with the 7 car. Montoya in fourth is 17 seconds away from a podium finish. And in fact, Elio Castroneves brings the team car into the pit lane and vacates the driver's seat. Cheer, Adam.
He does. It is Ricky Taylor getting back in behind the wheel of this Acura Team Penske, although we would assume that we'll be seeing Ricky Taylor again in the future in an Acura, given that he is still an Acura driver. But they are doing fuel and tires and just hoping and praying that they can hang on to this championship. It looks pretty good for right now, but they are not going to take it for granted. The car is cleared to leave the box, and Ricky goes out onto the track with just over an hour and a half left in this race.
The only contender left now, realistically, is the number 10 of Renger van der Zander, and they would have to make up a couple of positions to be able to do that, and I think that's unlikely.
What, three or four laps to catch up anybody else? They're 2 laps behind the number 31 car now, and another couple of laps to catch up number 85 car. So it's pretty much a long shot, I think, for them.
Yeah. I suppose you could get the two Cadillacs to park themselves up and let them get the laps back to get that number 10 car farther up the field. But in reality, their championship went south when that contact burst the right rear tyre out at turn 10. And Scott Dixon got the car back, but there was damage to the cooling system as well on the right rear. Cost them 5 laps, and that really took them out of it. They were looking in good shape after there'd been similar technical issues for the leading Acura Team Penske DPI in the championship. That was an intercooler problem. 11 laps dropped by the 7 car. They have made up a few. They got back to 7 laps at one stage. Currently 8 laps ahead, behind the lead car of Ollie Platt. But they will not drop any further back than 8th position. Magnus in the pit lane for Andy Lally in the number 44 GTD Lamborghini. Now, that was about on time, Jeremy, wasn't it? They've done 25 laps, that's all right.
Yeah, that's right, John. That's the last of the GTD leaders to make its cycle onto pit lane, so that means its final stop would be a good bit shorter than quite a few of the other contenders. 3 laps after the number 63 car, but I don't think that's going to be enough to vault it up quite up into contention, although it was running in the 5th position before this round of pit stop sequence began, or the 5th. It's all very, very close, and still very interesting, but number 63 car, that advantage now over Jan Halen is down to a second as both those two stops have been completed. Roman De Andres now finds himself in third position, not that far behind, and Mario Farnbacher in 4th position in the number 86 car for the championship leading car for Meyer-Shank Racing.
Yeah, and Lawson Aschenbach, by the way, has just put that car's fastest lap, that car being the Riley Motorsports AMG GT3 fastest lap of the racing. After 277 laps, he's put in a 2:02.122.
He already had the fastest lap.
The fastest lap of the racing GTD is the now behind the wall GRT Grasser with a 2:02.057, and Aschenbach goes through again and goes through to a 2:02.069, so he is now pushing for the fastest lap of the race. This is great stuff from Lawson. Great to see him back in the IMSA paddock. Alan Prosser says, I've been watching the number 77 on board from IMSA.com. Ollie Platt going very quickly, seemingly with barely any effort. Well, that's the mark of a two true grit, isn't it? He's changing up even before all the shift lights are on. So they need to be pushing that four-cylinder engine at this point. He's got 25 seconds lead. I'd say that was smart driving, Alan. Good spot watching that from the IMSA onboards, which are available wherever you are in the world. And if you're outside the US, of course, then full live coverage as well with our IMSA radio commentary. The whole race will be up as an archive in the next week or so. I would say after a 12-hour race, give the IMSA media team just a few days to get their breaths back and get their sleep patterns back in order. That should be on the YouTube official IMSA pages and channels within, as I say, a week perhaps. That'll be up there, and the rest of the season is there for your delectation and enjoyment as well. Pla is, I mean, he's supreme. We've seen this down through the years, Jeremy. He's been involved with a number of high profile projects. He's been a factory test driver and a factory driver. Great hire for Mazda Motorsports and for the Multimatic team, known to those guys for a few years as well, of course. And we've said this before about a number of drivers, but he's another one of these plug and play accessories, isn't he? He gets on, he knows sometimes he's not the full-time driver, so he's not going to get all the laps, but when you put him in the car, he does his job and does it exceptionally well. Fast,
well, he does.
And reliable.
Fast and reliable, yeah, and a good guy as well. That's, of course, that's why Michael Shank has hired him to run with this team, with his team for next year in the Acura. He's a really talented guy. Just been a really, really good stint. He's got that gap now to the second place guy out to over 26 seconds. Instead of about 5 or 6 seconds over Jonathan Bobberito during this stint. Wood Valley's still right there in third position in that car number 5, and the quickest driver in that car today has been Sebastian Bourdais. He will take it over for the final stint of this race. He might need to force caution in order to catch the number 77 Mazda. Hey, Sebastian Bourdais, but he's fired up. He is even more of a dominant, can be much even more of a dominant force than he is normally.
I think Pla's been doing a bit of fuel saving. He's already on to his 22nd lap, Jeremy, so he should be due in any time, and he hasn't come in. So this is going to be a 23 lap stint, and we're at 80 minutes still to go, just over 80 minutes still to go. I can't believe he's going to get it to a point where they can get to the end on just one more stop, but that's what they may be trying for.
He'll stop now and then he'll have one more stop to get him to the end. That's absolutely no problem for that car.
He needs to make then another 6 minutes because they're doing saving the fuel. Yeah, you're right, he doesn't if he's saving the fuel. He's been out there now for 40 minutes, so he needs to make another couple of minutes to get there. We're coming down to 80 minutes.
That's
now.
Going to be this lap.
Yeah.
That 2 minutes
Correct.
Is this lap, isn't it? He'll have this stop and one more. So there's another couple of minutes to whittle away off that as well.
Yeah, I agree. And this is then going to be a 23 lap stint. That is a very impressive run for Ollie. He's just coming through to the Le Mans turn on the back straight at the moment, onto the Alec Ullman straightaway. I'd expect to see him pulling this time. If he does a 24 lap stint, I should be even more impressed, because he's been quick. He's been very quick indeed, and his last lap was a 48.5. That car's best lap was a 48.1.
Yeah, no, he's turned a bunch of 48s during this stint and 49s, and very few. There've been maybe three laps above 1:50. Really, really impressive stint.
He has come into the pit. Yeah, he's come onto the pit lane. So that is going to be a 23-lap stint. Shea Adam, I expect to see the affable Frenchman out of the 77 car this time.
I would completely concur with that, especially since one of his co-drivers just went running as fast as he possibly could around the side of the car. And Oliver Jarvis has a lot of strength. He would rip Olivier Poix out of the cockpit for one more opportunity to get to go race around Sebring. So that could turn into a very ugly arm fight between those two friends. A very quick driver change. The door was shut. The tires were completed. The car was dropped off the air jacks, just waiting on fuel. Nice little clean of the windshield. The pit board flips over and Oliver Jarvis roars back into life with that little Mazda engine. Here we go. Let's see what Oliver Jarvis can do. And if he can become an overall winner of the 12 Hours of Sebring two times, as he did it back in 2013 in the Audi days.
Out that car rumbles. And the 2 litre four cylinder turbocharged engine getting up to pace. Last year we had the summer of Mazda, didn't we, with that run of victories for them in the middle of the season. Hasn't quite, Jeremy, been that momentum wasn't quite taken on into the 2020 season by Mazda Motorsports. Change of the makeup of the team, maybe just a little bit of disruption there, but they've had a decent enough season, but only that, a decent enough season.
Yeah, I mean, it started off with some really good promise, and then they had the win at the return after the layoff at Daytona, the second Daytona race. So at that stage, things were looking really, really good, and just kind of a multitude of niggly little things have kept them from getting the results that perhaps they said they were looking for since then. But this weekend, we didn't see the full pace of the car yesterday or the day before, but we're certainly seeing it today, and that car has been in contention. Both cars have been in contention very much all the way through this 12-hour race.
Teammate coming in from the lead, Jonathan Bomarito. We must have had 30 lead changes now, Jeremy, have we? Between seven cars?
We have. This is the 29th lead change.
Okay.
Be another one next time around, most likely.
Yeah. Okay, Jeremy, thank you. J-Bomb out of that car. Shea Adam?
Harry Ting. In fuel and tyres. Not as rapid of a stop, I have to say, as the 77. The award for this pit stop goes to the white car over the sole red Mazda, but still a good stop nonetheless. Is just waiting on fuel and cleaning off the windshield one final time. Mechanic leans back out of the way in a moment of panic as he realizes that Harry Tinkle will probably run him over, even though it would get him a pit penalty. Don't do that, Harry. And he's back out onto the fast lane. There was also a pit stop for the number 6 Acura Team Penske. Juan Pablo Montoya brought the car in. He'll be taking it back out as well. There was no driver change there.
Hello to Eric Canavati from Malaysia. Wondering if there might be more drama with about an hour and 20 minutes to go of the 2020 season. Eric, thank you for getting up early in Malaysia to watch and listen to the Mobile One Sebring 12 hours, 68th running of this great race. It's done it again this year. Kept my attention all the way through here.
Yeah. Has been a gripper, hasn't it?
There's no doubt at all. Ollie Jarvis will come back around into the lead next time he crosses the line. 77, just in behind the leading Scott Huffaker driven PR1 Matheson Motorsport LMP2 car at turn 16 at the moment. Both Scott on a outlap, Ollie on his first flyer after the pit stops. They're coming down the Alec Ullman straight now. There is something about racing into the darkness. We see it, of course, in the 24-hour race through the darkness in the 24-hour races that we cover at the Rolex, Le Mans 24 Hours, Dubai, Nürburgring. Bit of a difference down in Australia for the 12 hours at Bathurst, where we race out of the darkness into the daytime. Even more bizarre that there's no darkness practice for that race. So Dane Cameron, by the way, took over the Acura number 6. Juan Montoya out there. Sebastian Bourdais behind the wheel of the five car, as Jeremy predicted. So they're keeping to their driver rotation. So Ollie Jarvis, if he gets another 22 laps, that'll take him to just about 40 minutes to go, and he'll be able to go to the end from that. So 21-22 lap stints should get that lead Mazda to the end of the race, and he will be under strict instructions, as I'm sure Ollie Plough was, to bring it back in exactly the same situation that he took it over. Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter, has this.
I'm just seeing a lot that I'm really not understanding and not liking right now. The number five, Mustang Sampling Cadillac. Loic Duval got out of the car. Sebastian Bourdais got in. There was a lot of yelling and gesticulating between the two French drivers. They were not very happy with whatever was going on. And to be honest, I don't really know. But Sebastian Bourdais left the pit lane. Their pit stop was 1:06, which is about right for a pit stop at this length of the race. But Sebastian Bourdais just came back down the pit lane and was on it for 45 seconds. So that tells me he just had a splash and maybe one tire change. Very, very weird.
Right, unless something wasn't fastened properly. You can't, it's so difficult to do up your belts, for example, if you haven't got a lap belt done up. It's simply dangerous to continue. It's not like you can pull over it in the first lay-by and sort it out. But yeah, that is an odd one. It hasn't cost them anything as yet.
On the ground, though.
Yeah, it's cost them a lot of real estate, Jeremy. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it cost them. But that is an odd one. Very odd one. We'll get Shea onto the Mustang Sampling team and see if we can find out what that was. I would suggest that something went awry in the pit stop, and either there was a wheel nut loose or something like that. Shea, sorry, say again.
You want me to be a mole? You want me to go be a spy? Should I just go hide in the back of their pit lane and pretend to be one of their team members?
Yes, exactly.
You said you'll get me on their team.
Yeah, do it.
Excellent.
Get in there. Let's find out what's happening. I'm sure you'll be on the case.
So all of a sudden, it was looking an hour or so ago like we were in for a grandstand finish. Well, now we've got 20-odd seconds between each of the top five cars through a variety of incidents or dramas or mishaps or miscues or whatever it might be. And none of those has, how can I rephrase that? And the number 77 car now leads by 27 seconds over the sister car. And Dane Cameron has regained third position now after that miscue, whatever went wrong for number five, but is a full 20 seconds behind. I'm sure he's going to be charging hard, but I'm not so sure that the car might not have been damaged in that incident earlier on with number 31, because it certainly wasn't running as swiftly as it had been prior to that incident.
And Shea, that's number five Mustang Sampling Cadillac being behind the Acura. It's not good news for Cadillac and for the Manufacturers' Championship.
No, and full credit to Ryan Smith. Thank you, Ryan, for sending this text along. The move where the Acura gets around the Cadillac, that simply is enough for Cadillac to no longer be able to claim the manufacturer's title. So that is a big move. And now Cadillac, Chevrolet, GM, all of their hopes lie on the shoulders of Sebastian Bourdais to try and get around Dane Cameron. He's currently 27 seconds behind Dane. Let's see what he can do.
Coming into the weekend, whichever of those manufacturers finished ahead was going to win the Manufacturers' Championship. And it was looking good for Cadillac until this latest pit stop, this additional pit stop where it's all gone pear-shaped. And now he's behind the Acura. By a goodly margin too, so he's going to have to work really, really hard to claw that, because he's actually clawed back already a couple of seconds on that last lap, Sebastian Bourdais. But to do that from here to the end of the race is a pretty tall order.
He needs to do a Robin Liddell type of job and take 2 seconds at the lead every lap. Still battles, by the way, in GT Daytona, where first and second are separated by under 2 seconds. Ferrari versus Porsche, Aston Martin another 11 seconds further back as we head down towards the last hour. WWOJ 99.1 FM around the circuit and Central Florida. Sirius 202, XM 217, RS2, IMSA Radio around the world, streaming free and without block or break. Sound and Vision outside the US. Wherever you're watching or listening, thank you for joining us. Heading towards another hourly update and then the final hour of this fascinating race. And a new fastest lap of the LMP2 race just put in by Mikkel Jensen in the second place Tower Motorsport car. 2 laps away from the lead, a 150.103. That's quicker than all bar a couple or three of the DPI cars are circulating right now.
Yeah, that's certainly good going. Mikkel Jensen. 150.1 is fastest lap, but let's put that into perspective. Back in July, Gustavo Menezes turned 149.6 to set the race lap record in LMP2, which is actually quicker than the qualifying lap record as well. So the fastest lap around here by LMP2, 49.6. So that's the goal here, Mikkel, and or anybody else in the LMP2 field in the remaining hour and 8 minutes of this race. The number 52 car still leads, got a 3-lap advantage or a 2-lap and a bit advantage over Jensen, but Jensen's certainly charging along, as you say. Last lap around though for Scott Arfaker was a 51.1, so he's turning some good lap times in the number 52 car.
Sure, Adam, the problems for the number 5 Mustang Sampling Cadillac continues and have worsened. They're back in the pits.
They are back in the pit lane. The engine cover is off. Looked like they were going to replace the rear wing at the same time, but they have been jumped in the pit lane now by their sister car, the 85 JDC Miller Motorsports car, Mateus Lace, taking it back out of the pit lane. He is a minute and, well, close to 2 minutes, actually, down behind Dane Cameron. So now all the hopes of Cadillac rest with him. But Vodier did report that he got hit in the rear, and he didn't know why, but that would have caused some damage to the back end of that Cadillac, which clearly Sebastian Bourdais, after going out for a few laps and coming into the pit lane not once but twice, said needed to be fixed. This is a disaster for Cadillac.
No driver's championship, no manufacturer's championship at the moment. The way it stands, in comes the what was before this weekend the leading Cadillac in the Drivers' Championship, just 2 points off the championship lead. This is the number 10 of Renger van der Zande in the Konica Minolta Cadillac. So this car now sitting in seventh place leaves with a rumble of the V8. I didn't see Renger get out of that car there, shit.
That's funny, John. I don't think Renger's going to get out of the car at the end of the race. I don't think he'll ever get out of this car.
He's going to drive it home.
He's going to drive it clear across the pond all the way back to the Netherlands. Yes, Renger van der Zande would not get out of this car for all the tea in China, as you would like to say.
Well, the incident out on the circuit that the back end of the 5 car was damaged, diving through in the Jean de Bian bends it looked like the Porsche 912, and then pulling back in front of the GT car. Always a dangerous thing to do, I've got to tell you. The new rear end is on that car, and it's back out again. The problem being, Jeremy, and we've seen this time and time again, but I'm not apportioning blame at all here, but the minimum corner speed on the medium and slower corners if the GT cars are as quick and sometimes a wee bit quicker than the downforce, the more downforce dependent prototypes. They've got a wee bit more mechanical grip sometimes, and it's all very well getting by under braking using the downforce, but then pulling back in front of the GT car is not always the smartest thing to do.
No, we've seen that time and time again over the years, haven't we? Yes.
And again, by no means am I apportioning blame there. It's not being looked at by the race control. Meantime, Hardpoint Audi. AudiTyreCentre.com on board again this weekend. Came in partway through the season to Hardpoint. And that number 30 car, with Andrew Davis getting out of that car, Shea Adam.
And if you want to talk about a helmet that looks really cool under the black light in a car, Pierre Kaffer wins that award with his neon yellow and orange, a little bit of blue on the top of his helmet. It almost looks blue. It's actually black. But that is a very neat look for Pierre Kaffer for the next hour and 4 minutes of this race as he's taken over from Andrew Davis in the Hardpoint Audi. One last set of fresh new Michelin rubber on that car. Hour and 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Ooh, it's going to be close, but I think he can go to the end.
Well, yeah, that my senses just sharpened a little bit when you said that there about whether they could get to the end on that in GT Daytona. Here's the score. The next car in will be the Aston Martin number 23 from third position. And they'll easily be able to go by the time they do their next laps. I think they should be able to go to the end. Then it'll be the Wright Motorsport Porsche, and they should be able to go to the end. The last car to stop of that lead bunch will be the Scuderia Corsa, unless, of course, Jeremy, as the lead car, they cover off the situation that happens behind them with Heart of Racing and Wright Motorsport. If they make their last stop, you might find that the Scuderia Corsa comes in to keep out of that twilight zone that could happen if a safety car comes out.
Yeah, they'll certainly want to come in, I think, and make their final pit stop kind of as soon as they can in order to be able to get to the end without needing another pit stop. So I think that'll be I'm sure that's what they will do. The number 30 car, yeah, was in quite a few laps before. It was in a couple of laps before the number 23 car on the last stint. And this run, it came in on 262, so it's done, 26 laps, number 30 car, on this tank.
Just got a text from Rob Ferriel. Thank you so much for letting us know, Rob. The reason that the Hardpoint Audi came into the pit lane wasn't because it was planned to be their last stop. It's because there was a pressure for Andrew Davis. So they chose to do the last stop now. It's going to be very tight on fuel for them, but they're hoping that Pierre Kaffer might just be able to find a little bit something extra in that tank step across the line.
I think that's going to be difficult even for Pierre. He can work wonders, but not miracles. Reckon they're going to have a wee splash at the end. Is it on time? That's going to be tight. Coming down to the last 60 minutes of the 2020 IMSA season. And a bit of a powwow going on and a discussion going on behind the Wayne Taylor Racing pit lane at the moment. Now, what is all that about? The boss is, they're all WTR staff by the clothing that they are wearing. Here's how it stands then. Ollie Jarvis is leading the motor race by nearly 30 seconds from his teammate Harry Tinknell. 77 white Mazda from 55 dark red Mazda. Then Dane Cameron in the Acura Team Penske, the six car. Is at the moment doing enough for Acura to win the Manufacturers' Championship because they've got a full lap on the number 85, which is the best of the Cadillacs. Where is the 85? Just coming through turn 15 at the moment. And the number 6 Penske is just in front of it, actually. So, That's interesting. I wonder if they can get somewhere new. I've got a feeling that Cameron is pulling away, to be honest, in that battle. Bourdais is another 90 seconds further back from Andrews. That's the second of the Cadillacs. Then Philippe Nasr is pitting out of sixth position for Whelan Engineering, ahead of Renger van der Zander for another Cadillac in seventh position. Ricky Taylor is in eighth, and that's enough for them, with that Cadillac only one place ahead of them to win the Drivers' Championship. GTLM BMW by 22 seconds from Porsche. Conor De Filippi in the 25 from Nick Tandy in the 9-11, and Earl Bamber in the 9-12 is 6 seconds further back. They've got nearly 100 seconds, in fact, just over 100 seconds on Jesse Krohn in fourth position. GTD, 4.6 seconds from the leading Ferrari of Scuderia Corsa, the 63 car from Wright Motorsports Porsche. They, as I say, 4.5 seconds for the blue number 16. Then Heart of Racing, 10 seconds further back, with Roman De Angelis, who is just coming into the pits for his last pit stop, and they should be able to get to the end from there. Assenbach for Riley Motorsports for the moment takes over that position, but will have to make a stop. That's how it stands. We're moving in to the final chapter of the 2020 season and the 68th annual Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring. The final hour starts right now.